And we're back. This is the Tishinka Witko Brigade with Free Radio, Free Red Radio, Red Airways. And before you heard the comments from the Venezuelan consulate, First Council, and then we just played a song from a well-known artist, and
Atahualpa Yupanqui,
and he's he played that last cut was in dedication to Che. We were in Mexico City in 2000 when the EZLN marched into Mexico City to talk to the Mexican Congress and to include the reason for the march was to ask for inclusion, because in that country the Constitution up to that point in 2000, and we don't know exactly what changes have been made since that point, but the purpose of the La Marcha was to ask for inclusion of indigenous populations in Mexico itself. And they marched in on these tractor trailers, flatbeds, carrying arms. They were still they were armed, and they did it in a manner following the prophecies in which they made seven circles around Mexico City, or in general, then they marched around Mexico City and then they came in. We had some footage, and I showed that footage to some high schoolers in the Bay Area, and it was so powerful that, you know, we're talking about 1,500 high school people, young people that were assembled to ask for inclusion of indigenous ethnic studies within the high school curriculum in the Bay Area. And I was contacted, and I was a presenter. And I couldn't think of anything more relevant to the issue of inclusion than the footage I had. So I showed the footage I had, about 20 minutes worth. And it was powerful when they broke for a general session. All the people that had come to the workshop that I was conducting stood up and started yelling, you know, Zapatista, Zapatista, and EZLN. Down in Mexico City on the stage where I was at filming this amazing event, there was a million people in that audience. And they started doing these chants, and it's the first time I, sitting on the, you know, from my vantage point on the stage, that I heard the tremendous power of what that feels like when you have a million people all in unison, you know, chanting. And one of the chants that they had was Viva Zapata, and when you hear a million voices say Viva Zapata, and the language is not English, it's a different language, it's really powerful. And as I thought about it, I thought I was fortunate to be there. Really fortunate to be in the they had the vantage points. We had went down as a free press through the indie media revolution in 2000, trying to break up the National Association of Broadcasting monopoly, Clear Channel, and all of them guys, you know, Sinclair or whatever their group is, and all of them, you know, idiots out there, O'Reilly and Limbaugh and that 700 Club henchmen, calling for murder, death, kill, justifying and getting the Canute on there, you know, reading and misinterpreting Alice de Tocqueville and saying that these people ought to be tried for treason. They ought to be tried for treason because they're the ones that usurped and pulled a coup and put that idiot in the White House. They should have put him in the outhouse. And they used the Supreme Court, which has no power at all. Well, so we're not even talking about anything that's legitimate nowadays, because everything after that was basically illegitimate. And it's about time people wake up. But back to my story, these kids and the march was about inclusion. So after, 200 and some odd years, the indigenous people are still asking to be included in the daily operations as decision makers, as stakeholders, and so forth. But what's more ironic is they're asking to be included standing on their own ground. And we have all these immigrant people, you know, here, some of them here originally as invaders, and now they're just here as squatters and settlers. Settlers are just another cloak and dagger word to talk about people that are invading. That's all that is. You're talking about somebody that's settling. What are they settling? They're coming in and they're intruding upon somebody else's homeland. That's not a settler. That's an invader. That's a shock troop, you know. And they're using these people like they use in this invasion here. They used those people that they called settlers, like they're benign, right? But they dispatched all of them from the East Coast. They had whole companies set up recruiting people to go out west where they knew that the land was not theirs. They just sent in droves and droves of people. These have become the American people now, who are silently sitting back on their asses and allowing this corrupt, illegal government to continue slaughtering people. And then they get some idiots like O'Reilly. I like to go on those shows. I like to get them guys on the show. And the first time that O'Reilly goes off, you know, I'll be all in his face, because I ain't afraid of those guys. I know who they are. I know what they are. And the smug attitude that these people have driving around saying, you know, the invaders' ancestors driving around like they own everything. And then indigenous people have to sneak into their own country. They have to do all these. They have to plead to be included. And what's going on in Venezuela and other places is nothing major. It's just major that because the United States has been looked at differently because of the monopolization that they've developed, you know. And so the indigenous people are trading, you know, you have this commodity, I want, you know, you to give me this, you know, expertise. It's the barter system. It's the so-called French fur trade, you know, part two, the sequel, you know, when the French came over, they sort of, you know, play this bipolar game, you know. On one hand, they're supposed to be so, you know, democratic, but it was the French that went in and turned hunting into commercial overkill, along with the French. And along with the bastard child here, you know, the what they call the United States of America. And all of these terms have been cloaked. These are not terms. Now the face of racism is Uncle Sam. And let's be real clear about this. The face of racism to the world, because the United States is not the world. The world is the world. The United States is part of a world community. And to many people around this globe, the face of fascism does not look like it did. I'm tired of looking back in the 1940s and looking at, you know, fascism and all that from that era. We have a whole new generation of fascists. And they look like George Bush, and they look like Ariel Sharon, and they look like Pinochet, and they look like Pol Pot, and they look like They look like a lot of these people, you know, Condoleezza Rice. They look like, you know, Wolfowitz, Dumsford, and all these people. They are the faces of fascism. And like I was telling a friend the other day, you know, they were talking about that swastika. You know, I said, hey, you guys, that's not something that was made up out of the minds of those people over there. Oh, we had to get that straight. That swastika was turned into a political statement, just like everything else has been turned into a political statement to support the invasion, the continued occupation, and to continue the exclusionary type of society that indigenous people have to put up with, have been putting up with for 500 years. That sign, just like the mascot signs, just like the mascot industry and all the appropriation and marginalization that goes on in this country that they call democracy. That symbol turned backwards, standing upright, represents a thunderbird, and it was used on the cradle boards of the indigenous tribes as a good luck symbol. It has nothing to do with the way it was used and turned into a symbol. And so all these people that are going around using that sign and bastardizing is just another example of how they've bastardized everything else and how they've morphed into this runaway society that distorts and plays these word games on the sacred prophecies. And so they're not going to be feeling comfortable anymore, you know. Insurrection is not just a term. You know, and we're not talking about activism anymore. We're talking about something much more serious. And so, depending on what you call serious and how you flavor that to your liking, there's going to come a time when you're going to have to figure out what that actually really means. You know, and so as we talk about some of these programs that are going on, and then you heard the counselor talking about the trade programs, the oil programs through Venezuela and the agreements between the various countries down there. That's not a socialist idea. That's not an idea that has anything to do with the United States policy, its politicians, its polemics, its extremism, its schools, anything. It has nothing to do with them. What we're talking about is people who are tired of living in poverty and then being represented by puppet governments, the Dick Wilson syndrome, if you will, the same thing that is going on and occurring now in Iraq and other places, where we have a whole Arab nation that refuses to acknowledge the issues in their own living room. And we've lived through that here in this country in 1973. You know, we had Dick Wilson, called in the U.S. Marshals and the FBI and to attack. I mean, they even flew in the 82nd Airborne Division to attack the poorest people on the land in this country. The poorest people in this land are indigenous people. A. B. The poorest place in this county-wise in this country is Pine Ridge, which is overlaid with another county called Shannon County. And so this is the Afghanistan of this country, because the United States, when they attacked Afghanistan, attacked the poorest country in the world. And they then invaded Iraq, which was decimated by 12 years of sanctions, which is the same thing they did here in Pine Ridge when they attacked Bigfoot's people and murdered 300 people. This is after 20 some odd years of being sanctioned and being herded and hunted for being off the reservation. And this is a program that the people of America backed. So I don't want to hear all this stuff that they're talking about, you know, free this and free. There ain't nothing free for indigenous people. And it's going to be not free for the rest of you people either. In terms of the usual and accustomed arrogance. And I just wanted to recite here from a couple gentlemen that I think that you may or may not know. It's kind of hard to tell nowadays because the activists nowadays are, in my opinion, a lot of them aren't activists. A lot of them are opportunists. First gentleman here, I'll say the name after I read his passage here. You're dealing with a man who has a language. Find out what that language is. Once you know that language he speaks, then you can talk to him. And if you want to know what his language is, then study his history. His language is blood. His language is power. His language is brutality. His language is everything that's brutal. And if you can talk that talk, he doesn't even hear you. You can come talking that old sweet talk, or that peace talk, or that old nonviolent talk. That man doesn't even hear that kind of talk. He'll pat you on your back and tell you you're a good boy and give you a peace prize. How are you going to get a peace prize when the war is not over yet? Next passage is, quote, to fight for national culture means, in the first place, to fight for liberation of the nation. That material keystone which makes the building of a culture possible. There is no other fight for culture which can develop apart from the popular struggle. The first passage was eloquently delivered by Malcolm X, and the second passage is a real intellectual, Frantz Fanon, who wrote Wretched of the Earth. In terms of trying to find out what they're talking about, you're going to have to go out there and do some serious work. Now, the people in the 70s, what distinguishes them from the so-called 90s, is that in the 90s, the things that are going on now have lost a lot of their flavor because of the technology and the fast pace. And I suspect that a lot of the people were talking about inclusion on some level. Well, the thing about the 70s was they weren't talking about inclusion. They were talking about doing away with the establishment. They were anti-establishment. And they were froze out of everything to begin with. And they did things that I haven't seen anybody do in the same order. You had people having smoke-ins. You had people that were taking over land. We had people that were challenging a system that had not been challenged in many, many years, especially by its modern-day people. Nowadays, we have protests, and the protests are about minor things. When you consider that these protests are only about the planks within the framework, the difference is that the 70s was about going after the framework, and that's the big difference. And the music that came out of that era was also completely different than it is now. I mean, it wasn't U2 being appropriated for a revolutionary cause and made into some sort of a hip trend of some kind. U2 is talking about liberation. It's not a pop or rock group. They're talking about serious revolution in which the Irish Republican Army and its representative Sinn Féin, the policy provincial arm of the movement, is trying to throw off the yoke of British imperialism. We have nothing of that ilk, nothing of that flavor, excuse me, the flavor, even remotely close to that, that type of a group, in terms of their philosophy. I mean, there's no revolutionary group. There are people who are they're anarchists, and they're various offshoots of the political mainstream, but they're not revolutionary. In a sense that they're not trying to overthrow the mainstream, or they're not doing anti-establishment activities. They are resisting, and there are violent clashes, but it's all within the ballpark. We have people that are, you know, Earth Liberation and those kind of people. They're anti-development, but the question is, how far are they anti-establishment in terms of stopping the development and destruction of forests? How far are they willing to go in the sense of turning those forests back over to the indigenous populations? And I think you'll find that they all come up short. In which case, they're no different than the people that they're trying to stop developing and cutting down the forest, because they want to keep the forest for themselves when it's not theirs to keep. And that happened in Cancun, when the progressive left ignored the indigenous planks and platforms to go before the WTO to ask for and to address and to present their policies of developing nations, the national culture, what Fanon is talking about. All you people are not talking about a national culture. You're talking about still the same old culture. And so I see no real activism. I see only career opportunists. And the same for the indigenous people who have now been appropriated to the point where they're all gamblers in casinos. There are no native activists any longer. There are basically people who have been co-opted. And those people who were at one time in the leading edge have become informers. And so now we're teaching our children, the indigenous people are teaching the children how to be informers and gamblers. And yeah, they're doing some programs, again, within the stadium, within the ballpark, within the framework. Nothing is being done to address the overriding issue that our forefathers raised. Nothing. And so that's where the Tishinka Witko Brigade starts from. We start from there. We are outside the ballpark, and we don't want to get in the ballpark. We want the ballpark to be torn apart.
You're listening to the Tishinka Witko Brigade on Free Radio Olympia. And I'm trying to play a song for you. We'll go to another one.
Guerrilla warfare is a people's war, a mass struggle. Guerrillas have no alternative but death or victory. At times when death is a concept 1,000 times present and victory a myth only a revolutionary can dream. That is the heroism of the guerrilla. Che Guevara, 1963.
Cherokee Nation. Put us on a reservation. Took away our way of life. Tommy Hawk in a Bowie knife. Took away our native tongue. Taught their English to our young. All the beads we made by hand. Why, you can buy them from Japan.
Cherokee people.
Locked us on this reservation. But I can't wear no shirt and tie. Cause I'm a red man deep inside.
Dakota people.
Spaniard prisoner given a chance to be free as a conquistador finds himself in the so-called New World without his Spaniard woman and among conquest subjects already perceived as subhuman. He picks and chooses an indigenous woman. He rapes her and has children. These children he does not care for, as they are half human. He beats a woman when she refuses his orders. He abuses the children when he wants to and when they get in his way. And now 502 years later, the descendants of the ultimate dysfunctionalism, a blueprint for the colonized. 7 generations of cycle of illness, of people without heads, without an identity, without a direction, without an understanding, and without a connection. Torn from their mother and raped by their father, now lost in a sea of white, they begin to recover, recognize their identity and connection to these roots. These roots that run deep, deep in the soul of our mother, 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 deep in the soul of our mother.
Who am I is the question. Now I'm looking to the sky. Or is that question really why? Where do I fit? Souls have been ripped in half apart. No pulse coming from my heart. I live and yet I'm dead. To live or exist, I cut off my head in shame. Look to my blood and blame.
Created a hardship. My oldest son,
Yellowbird,
went back to his Lakota way. So when my second son was joining the army, my oldest son said, he said, I'll see you in Mexico. And you in that uniform, he said, I'll face you. So it has affected my family. And to me, the way I look at it is that this is a personal challenge. It doesn't, you know, for him. Yeah, yeah. All of that was that he endured in this military service. And I myself have told my children not to join the military service. But the only one listened to me was my oldest son. And I know now, if I don't want my children to do something, I just don't say it. So that is what my son said to me was, Mom, you told me you will never have that much money to send me to college. So I'm going to go into this military service and I'll earn myself some college money because they're offering to U.S. Army college tuition. I'll earn it and I'll come back. And the struggle, we still struggle with that concept that this is the same army that turned on us. And when my son went in there, what it did for him, because he too, before he went into the service, when he was a junior in high school, I talked Lakota to him and he told me, he got really mad. I talked Lakota to him at the breakfast table. He stood up and he pointed his finger at me and he said, it's too late. You lost your chance to teach me Lakota. You were drunk when I was a little one. And so you didn't. You were so busy drinking, you didn't teach me. Now you want to teach me? Forget it. We're all speaking English today. Look around you, Mom. It's everywhere. It's English. What are you going to do with the Lakota language? So that, after he went into the army, then he realized how important the language and culture. He said, when I come home, Mom, we're going into the sweat lodge. I'm going to the sun dance. When I come home, I'm going to speak Lakota. He came home and we went into the sweat lodge. He introduced himself in Lakota. So when they go out in that world, but that way of life has always been our way. As young men, they're told to go on a ozuye, which is a journey. They tell them to go west, north, east, south. Go in all directions and find what's out there. And you come back and you make your report. And that's the challenge, to go and live among other nations. And that's what he's done. That's the way I look at it. That he's learned all. He knows the strength of this United States of America, the military might that it has. He knows it. But he's always been good with in that way anyway. He's really a good hunter, even before he went into the army. He's a real good hunter. He was a real good football player. You know, he did everything. He's not very big, but he was given a valuable award at the Lakota Nation Invitational for his football. He's very strong. His size is, you know, don't let the size fool you. He's very strong, but that's the way that to go and learn the ways of another person, another life, another nation. He learned it. But on the other hand, we are still the aborigines of this land. And to protect it, that's a part of it. To protect it from further intrusion, that's a part of it. To keep what the United States of America calls peace. That's what has to be done, and so be it, you know.
That was Philomene Blacksmith Lakota addressing some of the contradictions of being indigenous under siege in the world today. Before that, you heard Aztlan Underground and Buddy Red Bull and commentary by my co-host Wembley Watakpe. We are almost out of here, but I want to bring you a couple of more selections more. Jim Boyd.
Dancing all alone, feeling nothing good. Been so long since someone understood. All I've seen is why I weep. And all I had for dinner was some sleep. You know I'm lonely, I'm so lonely. My heart is empty and I've been so hungry.
This is a request from the judges.
All I need for my hunger to ease is anything that you can give me, please. I ain't got nothing, I heard no good news. I filled my pockets with those reservation blues. Those old res blues. Those old reservation blues. And if you ain't got choices, well then what else do you choose? Good news. I fill my pockets with those reservation blues. Those old res blues, those old reservation blues. And if you ain't got choices, well then what else do you choose? Those old res blues, those old reservation blues. Choices, well then what else do you choose? If you ain't got choices, ain't got much to lose.
At Crazy Horse Singers Juniors.
Hey!
can hear you. They can hear you. Na pwede chak upo chicha shakim. Crazy Horse Juniors. Don't you just hate that when they fool you like that? Hell Chaha, I used to fancy dance for 15 years before I started traditional dancing. Crazy Horse Juniors, they have a certain style to their songs. They look like they're almost gonna stop, but they keep on jamming. Now, you traditional dancers, those of you that stop, now you guys know the style of the Crazy Horse Juniors. Okay, Sons of the Oglalas. Yeah, give him a break. Give Ambrosa a break. He's really tired from dancing. Water for the judges. Judges, they need water. Ambrose's leg was going, one leg was really going, so last night he said he was cramping up all kinds of ways. He used up a whole tube of Bengay on one leg. Casino ke iganip se chao. The third song will be rendered by the Sons of the Oglalas. As soon as we get the high sign from the arena director, Sons of the Oglalas, get a real sweet sounding song together so that all our dancers could keep in time and do some fine stepping. All right, we have the high sign. Sinteki. How? Thank you. Thank you, Sons of the Oglalas. Thank you, dancers.